Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Welcome to the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. I'm your host, John Lossworth. Joining me, as always, are my co-hosts, Mark Hoffmeyer.
I want to see a Captain Ron remake starring Daniel Day-Lewis.
Ooh. I wonder what he would he method Kurt Russell?
No, yeah. He would method his eye patch.
Yeah, I want to work on that movie where Daniel Day-Lewis is at all times Captain Ron.
Sure.
I would like to see the hard R Captain Ron that way.
So, wait, what?
Like the hard R-rated movie,
like the Gangs of New York meets Captain Ron.
Like make it a method acted Captain Ron starring Daniel Day-Lewis, and it's just a hard R movie.
No, man, I just want to sit around and drink beer with Daniel Day-Lewis. Have him call me Swab.
Could Kurt Russell still be on set as the Kurt Russell advisor? Like, yeah.
Like there's dialect coaches.
Yeah,
he's like, you were acting too much there. Just live it.
Yeah.
Daniel Day-Lewis is like, I only know how to act. Well, then live acting.
That sounds like a great documentary, the making of the Captain Ron remake starring Daniel Day-Lewis.
Like everyone acts, right? All actors act, but I feel like Daniel Day-Lewis acts.
Yeah. No, I get it.
Right?
Yeah.
Sure.
It's like,
you know how,
it's like Leo in The Revenant. Like, he was doing a lot of acting. Like,
yeah,
a lot
he was
of acting.
Grunting. Yeah, he was puddle grunting.
Sure, sure.
Puddle grunting.
But as someone who's, like, living it, like, I don't know. What's a good example? I'm trying to think.
Like, actors living a role?
Yeah, where it's not... Where it's not like totally obvious that they're acting, like I'm trying to think of a good example here.
Castaway.
Yeah.
He was straight up starving himself, sun scorched.
But he didn't look like he was acting out there.
Yeah.
I thought that's what we were looking for. Like, yeah.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
But Daniel Day-Lewis,
he was so skinny at the end of that. I'll bet that he was delirious and seeing shit
guys,
while he was on.
Guys, Daniel Day-Lewis was in the movie. He was Wilson.
Oh! You know, that was my least favorite part because I thought, like, Wilson was, like, really trying too hard.
Wilson!
Yeah. Yeah, and they cut out all the dialogue, too, that Daniel Day-Lewis had.
He was a scene stealer, that Wilson, a.k.a. But, Daniel Day-Lewis.
You know what I mean, though, about his acting?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I will say, like, his acting is better than most.
Oh, it's amazing. You
know? Sure. But, yeah, it's just his way of doing it, I guess.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying
Watch, like, any Richard Linklater movie. Like, they're all the actors are just living in the moment, you know, it seems like. I mean, that's just probably due to his way of directing, but it's just... Yeah, any Linklater movie, you just watch and just like, I don't think anybody's acting. Everybody's just kind of living in the moment.
Yeah, you know? Daniel Lewis would be like, what's my motivation, Linklater? Just be natural with it.
What?
All right, give me 6 months.
Guys, he was in Everybody Wants Him the whole time.
I'm like bagging on Daniel Day-Lewis when he's one of like Hollywood's treasures.
He's like the greatest actor of our generation.
Like, I would argue that. I would, too. I'd be like, yes, he is. If someone, said that to me, I would be like, I don't disagree with you.
The thing is, I don't think you'd find anybody who would disagree with you. Like, you would, you have to go out and try to find someone who would, to argue with you in that, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like oh, this, dang.
Like, he's the greatest actor. Like, John C. Reilly might be the best, like, hey, man.
Hey.
I'm not acting.
No.
But I'm acting.
Sure. John Limigood. Do some acting. Acting. Acting.
Hi. Okay. I don't know how to react to that.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
Yeah, John's better with the natural stuff. You can't put him on the spot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you can't do it.
He's a walking Linklater movie.
That's right.
You just need to be dropped into a Finnegan tank of freestyle.
Ooh.
There we go. Okay, I think now's a good time to start the podcast like we usually do. We have listener questions. Mark, I think you got questions for us this week.
Yep, and this comes from Eric, and he asks, has there ever been a movie cast better than Black Hawk Down?
Okay, who was in Black Hawk Down, real quick, as a refresher?
Okay, Eric Bana, Ewan McGregor, Sam Shepard, Tom Hardy, Ewan Bremmer, Josh Hartnett.
There's Kim Coates,
Sizemore. Yep, William Fichter, Sam Shepard, Kim Coates. You're right. Hugh Dancy from Hannibal, Ron Eldard, Ian Grufford, just a really good cast.
Yeah,
of good people.
Sure.
Right, and like I think they fit that movie perfectly.
Hmm.
Jason Isaacs was in it. Jeremy Piven. Yeah. Oh, Jamie Lannister.
Oh, that
Nikolai Coster, yep. Waldo.
Yeah.
Orlando Bloom.
Sure. Okay.
It's a strong cast.
Yeah.
But okay. So, I want to ask you guys something. So, there's been some, you know, Orient Express had 8 Oscar winners on it. That's one of the most stacked movies ever. But I'm thinking the most stack cast of the last few years is American Hustle, because it has like Jennifer Lawrence, Amy Adams, Bradley Cooper, Christian Bale, Robert De Niro, Michael Pena, Shea Whigham. There's a bunch of character actors, but that's just like relevant wise. I think that's been the most stacked of the last few years is American Hustle.
That's a pretty good cast. It's just, I don't know, like, so, I mean, they're both really good movies, really good casts, but, like, the weird thing is that, like, these movies, like, they never, I mean, despite, like, the amazing ensemble, like, they didn't really stick with me, you know?
Yeah.
Did you guys, like, kind of get what I'm trying to get at, I guess?
I didn't really like American Hustle that much. I liked it, but it didn't stick with me. Black Hawk Down, I like it, but I don't remember much of it.
It's like, you know, you can have like an all-star like baseball team, but like it doesn't mean like they'll get to the World Series, you know. It's like because my answer would be Saving Private Ryan.
Oh!
I stole yours, yeah.
Dude, well, I had a couple, but that was my number one. Because
yeah, because like, the great thing about Saving Private Ryan is that it's also a really good movie, you know. I mean, yeah, I do largely, in fact, to the cast. I mean, the directing also had a huge part in it, too. But, like, you know, I felt like everybody in Saving Private Ryan had, like, a really, really, like, important role in the movie, you know? Whereas, like, these other movies, like, I don't know. Like, I'm not saying, like, the cast members, like, they didn't have, like, their own important roles. It just, for some reason, like, it just didn't really, they didn't really knock it out of the park, you know?
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of people are lumped, but, like, dude, Saving Private Ryan is like, you're gonna like all these characters, and then they're gonna die terribly. Vin Diesel, that scene with Giovanni Ribisi, Barry Pepper. Yeah. Oh gosh, why am I not remember the knife scene where the German's going shh?
Yeah. Adam Goldberg.
Nathan Fillion's in it. Paul Giamatti, Ted Danson.
Yeah.
Tom Sizemore.
Nathan Fillion is in it.
Tom Hanks. Yeah, Nathan Fillion's in it.
Yeah,
I mean, this is a stacked cast,
and they all had like really, really awesome, emotional, poignant scenes. You know, they all had something to contribute.
Oh, for sure. I mean that death with Giovanni Ribisi sits there and he tells his story about how sometimes he would pretend like he was sleeping and his mom would just sit there like wanting to hang out with him.
Yeah.
And then he gets killed the next day. It's horrible. It's like, it's worse than a horror movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what war is.
And then, see, John, I thought you were going to say Love Actually.
I think it didn't even pop in my head, but that's a pretty heavily stacked cast. Yeah.
I mean, there's so many like Oscar nominees and Oscar winners. And I was going to say Ocean's 11, but actually Ocean's 12 adds Oscar winner Catherine Zeta-Jones and Bruce Willis to it. So it's even more stacked.
Well, yeah, but that's just riding the coattails of Ocean's 11, though. So, I mean, I see that where it is, but I think that Ocean's 11 was more effective.
No, I'm saying, like, stacked cast-wise. So, like, as far as a cast that is more stacked and Oscar winnery, Ocean's 12 has more than Ocean's 11.
Okay, yes, sure. Definitely.
Like, Bruce Willis just pops up for a little bit. Like, Casey Affleck.
Hmm.
I don't know, man. I like Saving Private Ryan. Let's do that.
Yeah.
You know, let's do Mother's Day. Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah.
Kate Hudson. Jason Sudeikis.
I didn't even watch that. Is that any good?
No, I didn't watch it.
Well, here's the thing.
That,
like,
that Valentine's Day has Halle Berry chilling with Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
That wasn't a very good movie. I mean, it was cute, but nah.
Well, here's the thing. Like, because like in the question, the Black Hawk Down was used an example. It was just like, I mean, Black Hawk Down, Saving Private Ryan, they're both war movies. I think war movies tend to just kind of, like, you just need, like, a really good ensemble cast in the first place, because that's what it kind of trends towards, right?
Yeah, like, Flags of Our Fathers had a good ensemble.
Yeah, like, I think that's, like, a hallmark of just that genre. Like a good war movie just needs, like, a good cast up and down, you know?
Ooh, The Bridge on the River Kwai had a great cast.
Yeah.
You know what failed? Wind Talkers.
Oh.
Because Christian Slater and Nicolas Cage couldn't carry it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe if they added Daniel Day.
Wait. What about like a different genre? Like a comedy?
Well, there's Rat Race. It's a mad, 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 mad world. Those were loaded.
Yeah.
Judd Apatow movies are loaded with actors. Like Knocked Up.
Yeah. Oh, Anchorman.
Oh, yeah. Didn't even think about that.
Yeah, I mean...
Just with the cameos.
Sure.
That's a good one. You're coming at us strong today, Laz.
Don't I always?
I like that.
I think that's the final answer. I came out strong today.
Ugh. And then Anchorman 2 has even more. It has, like, Will Smith and, oh, you came out strong. Yeah, that's a better answer. Never mind.
All right. What's the next listener question?
All right, so the next one is, what is the best black eye of cinema? So someone gets punched in the face, hit with a brick. If that's all you have, a black eye, after you get hit with a brick, you're pretty lucky.
So it's like a literal black eye. We're not talking about like some type of metaphor. Like, oh,
it's not like a scarlet letter.
Yeah, okay. All right.
I'm like a scarlet letter of not listening to your husband in the 30s.
Mm-hmm. So I am going to go with Beer Fest. Because the guy had it for an entire year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, he got a black eye. He's like, well, I kind of want to keep it for training. And so for an entire year, he had a black eye.
I'm looking this up right now. Like, I don't remember that.
He kept getting punched in the face to keep up the black eye.
Oh, yeah. No, now that I'm seeing all the pictures, I remember it.
So it's a year-long black eye.
So,
this question came from DJ, by the way.
Little DJ.
Yeah.
So I thought that I was going to research this, and I tried typing like 8 different permutations of black eye in film, shiner in film, movies with black eyes, shiners and black eyes. Like,
and you probably just got a bunch of vampires.
No, all I ever got was that there's a movie called Black Eye from like 1974, and it dominates all the search results. You cannot. It's like you might find one picture of Rocky and 800 pictures of this movie, Black Eye. And then everything else is like demons with blacked out eyes.
Did you get anything, Lazabeth?
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to.
Oh, sorry, Levin Good.
Go ahead, John.
I'm sorry.
Well, no, so I actually just had to go off of memory. And for me, it was, I wanted to say Rocky, but that was really just a swollen eye that wasn't a black eye yet. But The Waterboy.
Oh, yeah.
In The Waterboy, Bobby Boucher picks up a black eye, and he's always just smiling and happy. And then the next day, he's like wearing one of his dad's old disco suits, and he goes to pick up that girl, Feruza Balk from The Craft for a date. And he's like wearing this like 80s zoot suit or 70s zoot suit or something, like with his black eye and his curly hair. And I don't know, I feel like he owned that black eye like no one else.
That's a good one.
Sure.
You really built that up.
Yeah. For me, this is kind of a tough one because, like, well, I didn't do any research on it. I guess it's a good thing I didn't. I was trying to, try to think of, like, just characters I've seen in movies that have black eyes, and I was just, like, drawing a blank. I think the only one I could think of, it's kind of recent-ish that I saw, like, a year or two back. But, Sean William Scott in Goon, I think he had a couple black eyes, you know. But it's just, like, Goon's just an amazing movie. It's about, if you've never seen it, go watch it right now. It's about just, like, kind of a low-level hockey enforcer whose job is just beat people up. And, like, I think for, like, half the movie, he had, like, a black eye. It was just, I don't know, the movie's just amazing. And it felt, like, natural for his character to have a black eye, you know?
And I'm being earnest when I say this. It's one of my top 10 of this century. I love Goon. I think it's, I love it.
I think it's
so good.
It's one of the best, not just the best hockey movies ever made, but I think it's just one of the best sports movies ever made in general.
Yeah.
You know?
Can we make a movie about curling and actually try to make it good so then people are like, well, I guess it's the best movie about curling?
Yeah.
We'll have Kurt Russell as the coach.
Oh.
Daniel Day-Lewis will be the little thing that slides across the ice. I'm curling.
And then the runners up for me are Fight Club, and then Friday.
Fight Club, good choice.
Yeah, those are my two runner up. So I like we got Beer Fest, we had Waterboy and Goon. And then we had Daniel Day-Lewis as a curling puck.
Now I bet you if you look up the posters for all those movies, I think probably like a good 80-90% of them probably have like a black eye in their posters.
Oh yeah, you're right, because the one with Edward Norton smiling and then Sean William Scott smiling.
Yeah. Waterboy might not have a black eye in the poster. I'm not sure.
And then there was Meet the Parents from The Water Volleyball when they she puts away the ice with the towel wrapped around it and you see him like ah.
And then, what, Mike and Dave need wedding dates? There's a good black eye in that one.
Right, yeah. Same thing when she took the ATV tire to the face.
And then Kramer versus Kramer. There's a good one in there. Terms of endearment.
Yeah. You know,
Terms of endearment sporting some wicked black eyes.
Yeah, it's Anthony Hopkins after he walloped Emma Thompson.
Now, Mark, you probably have me beat in this category, but like, I've only had, like, one black guy in my life, and, like, when I did have it, like, I just felt like the coolest kid in the block. It's something about black guy. Like, it hurts. It sucks. But at the same time, it's just, like, you just feel, like, really macho and cool. Like, yeah.
I've had, like, 8 to 10 of them. And I remember one time I got a black guy on one eye, and then the next day I got a black guy on the other eye.
Do you, like, live in the Thunderdome? How are you picking up black eyes this frequently?
I was a feral kid, man. Like, that's what we did.
Yeah. See, the thing is, like, my black eye story, like, the only black eye I ever got, it wasn't because someone hit me. It was because, like, I was riding a bike. I was trying to, like, do, like, a little... I was trying to jump, like, this little ramp, but I didn't go all that well. I ended up, like, crashing and, like, freaking my face kind of hit the handlebars, so...
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of wish I did get punched. I felt like that would have hurt less. But, yeah. It wasn't, like, a cool black eye story, but, like, I still had a cool-looking black eye, so I still felt macho.
Yeah,
You know?
Yeah, Laz knew me when I used to drive around with boxing gloves in my trunk, and I'd like box in parking lots.
It was very
St. Pete.
Yeah.
Wait, how does he say it in Spring Breakers? St. Pete.
St. Pete. All right. I think that's the final answer.
Yeah.
St. Pete. All right. I think it's time to move on to the topic for today. Love and Good, I will give the honors to you.
Is this for me? This is for me?
Let's do it.
I'll let you light the fuse.
You know, if Michael Bay and Mad Max Fury Road had a baby and then exposed that baby to Godzilla levels of Marvel gamma radiation, I think that you'd get the amount of action that we find in The Fate of the Furious.
Yeah.
I want to label this one of the most action-packed movies I've seen in years. And this brings our favorite crew that gets bigger and bigger and bigger with every subsequent movie to bigger and bolder places with villains with more unbelievable plot lines. And we've just gone into complete bonkersville where the movie has totally given up explaining anything. I love this movie. I think it's bonkers-tastic. We're going to talk about The Fate of the Furious today.
Hey. Fate. Can I just say how much I love the fact that they just took the fact that it was a F8. They just kind of went all corny with it. It's The Fate of the Furious. Wink, wink. Take a look at the title and the number. See what we did. Huh? Huh? Yeah.
You know what I faded most about this movie?
Oh, really?
Is that my favorite part was Jason Statham, but I was also furious that he was part of the crew. Wait, I didn't mean to do that.
No.
I love Statham is hilarious, and that the baby scene on the plane, priceless. But he killed Han, and he murdered like 48 cops in the last film.
This is fair. So before any of us saw this, I told Mark, Mark, I'm going to go see this movie this weekend. Are you seeing it? And you just said, no. And I said, why not? He said, because Statham killed Han, and that's bullshit.
Yeah, I didn't want to see it. I really didn't. I'm like the fast scholar. I broke down I watched every movie and watched when they drank Corona. And I figured... And I figured out that Corona is only consumed in California. The only time anybody other than Dom drinks Corona is when they're with Dom. No Coronas ever finish, and some people don't know how to drink beer. And so movies that feature Corona being consumed, they average $250 million at the box office and have a combined RT-IMDb average of 63.25. Movies that don't feature Corona being consumed only average $163 million and average 57% on Rotten Tomatoes. So movies that feature Corona being consumed do better than movies that don't.
Wait, is this all movies?
Yep, just fast movies.
Oh, okay. I was like, holy shit.
And I also I went out on a limb and I said that they were going to drink Corona, but they weren't in L.A., so no Corona is consumed in Fate.
Oh, wow.
Not one Corona.
Because they're not in L.A.
So when Kurt Russell had the Belgian Ale, were they in California?
Yeah.
That was in California? Okay, so I didn't remember that. Okay.
Yep, that's when they were home. And then they got their house. Oh, you know, Jason Statham tried to blow up Vin Diesel and almost kill a child.
And he tried to blow up Hobbs.
Yeah. And he almost took Elsa Pataky, who was pregnant at the time.
I mean, He tried to blow up Hobbs, and Hobbs ended up flying out of like the fourth story of a building and really should have shattered into Hobbs pudding.
Can I ask you a question, Lazabeth?
Please.
All right. You're standing on a pool table,
mm-hmm.
right? A regular pool table. And you just stand on the ledge and you just free fall. Face first on the ground.
Ooh.
What do you think would happen?
It's not pleasant.
I think I would hit the ground.
What, would think it would hurt?
Yeah.
I think he'd break a rib, bend three more ribs, break a collarbone, and break two fingers.
At least.
So what happened to Hobbs when he fell five stories with someone on top of him?
Hobbs pudding.
He just like shrugged off glass off his shoulder and went, "Where's my protein?"
Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got all that muscle. I think he's got more, what, quote unquote, padding.
Yeah. He's not allowed to shoot movies in New Zealand because he eats too much cod.
Sure.
So, like, everyone's superhuman in these movies. They have very short memories, and they forgive people quickly.
Well, and they specifically get disproportionately more superhuman with each subsequent movie, and everyone becomes a new level of martial arts sensei with each subsequent
movie. Or become, like, super smart in the case of Tej, a.k.a. Ludacris.
Tej just kind of hung out in Miami in the second one. Now he's, like, a computer hacker.
Yeah. Or who knows how to... Who knows his way around a Russian nuclear submarine?
But you know, it doesn't make sense. Ramsey's a computer hacker, but there's two computer hackers on the team.
I guess you can, there's always room for one more hacker, right? I don't know.
You never have enough hackers?
I but guess not. Every single aspect of this movie, though, is in, from 5, 6, 7 to 8. Every component in any of these movies just gets turned up a little more with each movie. Like the geographic scale, first two movies, US, right? Third movie, Tokyo, fourth movie, Mexico, fifth movie, Brazil, big jump, sixth movie, all over Europe, seventh movie, the Middle East. Now we're just jumping all over the place. Like it's just bigger and bigger. And then the villains have these, they go, it goes from like what, truckers that are getting robbed in part one.
Yeah.
And by the way, back in part one, when the crew had like three cars and there was a trucker who was driving and with one hand shooting a sawed off shotgun, he almost took out the whole crew.
Yeah. He kicked their butts.
And now they are all like 47 Ronin senseis. Just like fighting dragons with magical swords.
So before we get into the plot of this movie, I just want to say, I think the most damage done in the series is Furious 7. Because there's a scene where they wipe out about 50 terracotta warriors.
Ooh.
Like, oh, those are priceless, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, if you had to put a price tag on a terracotta warrior, what would you say? They were made in, what, 3,000 BC?
I'm sure they'd if they were to sell it, I'll bet that if you sold it to a rich guy, it would sell for millions, right?
Wait, for just one? For just one?
Yeah.
I'm thinking $10 million for one.
If a rich guy wanted it in his foyer, I think he'd be looking at millions of dollars.
See, I'm thinking kind of low. If I was a rich guy, I wouldn't pay more than, like, $250K for one.
Then you don't get to have one in your foyer.
For a 3,000-year-old terracotta warrior?
Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, I only get one of a set. I'm not paying a ridiculous amount for that.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, you're not buying bulk, so you have to pay more.
Oh, okay.
See, I was thinking like I was doing a Dr. Evil going $1 billion.
Like maybe for all of them, like for the set.
Oh, yeah, all of them. I mean, that's a lot. There's like a couple hundred. Right.
I'd go $1 billion for the set.
If I was Elon Musk, I would buy the Terracotta Warriors.
And then if I was Jet Li, I'd animate them.
And then I'd hire Brendan Fraser to battle them.
Sure.
Yeah, well, then I'd hire Yetis to throw Brendan Fraser.
Then I'd hire, oh, shit.
Yeah.
A dragon.
I'd get Maria Bello. To take over for Rachel Weisz.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we've gone all over the globe. We fight villains that have bigger and bigger and bigger agendas. In this movie, the villain is kind of Vin Diesel in a weird, secretive way. But we meet Charlize Theron in Cuba. This whole Cuba intro, by the way, was a lot of fun.
It's like the exact same as Triple X 2 or 3.
Except in this, he was racing a car that was on fire backwards.
You know what I hated? This is my least favorite part of the movie, though, because Paul Walker died in a fiery crash.
Mm-hmm.
And then this movie starts with Vin Diesel in a fiery crash, hitting a concrete median and flipping.
Yeah, and that was like a hellfire burning out of that engine.
So I'm like, this is pretty insensitive. No?
I mean...
I thought it was a pretty cool scene.
It is Fast and Furious, man.
Yeah.
It's not the Fast and Politically Correct.
But so, wait. So, but after that, right, he's just strolling down the street, and he meets, like, tourist Charlize Theron, right? And she kind of, like, fools him into helping her when she really had whatever part of the engine that she unplugged.
The Johnson, right? Rod. The Johnson rod.
Yeah. Well, that was the Johnson rod that I was
the glove box filter.
Oh, yeah.
So it turns out that she's behind all of the other villains in parts 5, in parts 6 and 7.
Yep.
Can I just point out, like, real quick how weird, like, she looks with, like, those kind of pseudo dreads that she was rocking.
You got an Oscar winner wearing dread. I think she's worn the best dread since Jack Black, and I Still Know What You Did Last Summer.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it kind of threw me off. I'm like, huh. I mean, she kind of pulls it off, but I don't know.
I was sitting there wondering why she put on that whole, like, that whole act.
Yeah, she didn't have to. Yeah.
But like, what was the point in that?
To show how great she is, because she had to avert. You know, Vin Diesel went and bought a baguette and a single rose, which you could see in his bag. Mm-hmm. And she had to, like, get him there and to prove how good she is.
Like, she had to know where he was going, right, and about when. And then she was just waiting there for probably an uncomfortable period of time without AC.
She was tinkering with that car unnecessarily for about 30 minutes.
Like, at least. She could have been for an hour.
Have you ever tried to waste 30 minutes? Like, just, like, not doing anything. It's horrible.
Under the heat of the Cuban sun?
Yeah, like, and you can't go anywhere.
You mean, like, without, like, a smartphone, right?
Yeah, nothing. You're just sort of trying to, like, dink around for 30 minutes.
I'd like to point out that she has such fair skin that even with the best sunblock that she could get, that direct sun exposure for 30 minutes, she would have been fried by the time he got to her.
Yeah, maybe she, like, spreads her hair out.
She would have been glowing red.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh. Well, she is Australian. Don't they get a lot of sun?
No, South African.
Oh, South African. Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, maybe they put... oh, no, never mind. That joke doesn't work.
Yeah.
So she's like this super terrorist who evidently was behind the Shaw brothers, right? And we find out that apparently she was pulling the strings even of Deckard Shaw when Deckard was going through his, like, what looked like just pure malevolence in Furious 7.
I really hate that trope when you find out there's, like, a greater evil pulling the strings, even though, like, it's very convenient that they were able to do that.
Well, you know? Because they're pulling a fast one, aren't they? Because
they're pulling a fast one.
They're pulling a fast one. It goes to, like, what you said about how, like, it was totally uncool how he did what he did to Han, and now we're just supposed to buy him as okay. And the movie is telling us, like, oh, yeah, by the way, he was doing everything he was doing for his family and to protect his people.
Wait, so he murdered 48 officers just to visit his brother?
Maybe. I don't know what strings she was pulling then. Maybe, but they made it seem like, oh, yeah, yada, yada, it was because of her.
Yeah, they yada, yada'd his insane serial killing.
And then, you know, like, after that, it just turns into, like, Hobbs and Shaw, like, having these kind of, like entertaining, pithy, alpha male, I'm tougher than you, oh, I'm going to bang you like a
I don't like that one. I just want to say one thing about Charlize Theron. Her being there made Vin Diesel better than he's been in films. This is the best Vin Diesel's been in, I don't know, since he was trying.
That's a good... That's a pretty good point. Like,
there's a couple scenes where he, like, teared up and he, like, you understood what he said in several sentences. Like, in this one, you're like, hey, guys, what's going on? You're like, holy shit. Like, he stepped up his game. There's a couple scenes where I was like, damn, Vin's acting.
Acting.
Yeah, he was Daniel Day-Lewis-ing it. Yeah. He wasn't John C. Reilly-ing it.
Sure. You think he's trying to impress Charlize? Trying to get
another? Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's like,
if you're I think you have to step up your game.
Oh, yeah.
No?
It's Charlize Theron, man.
Oscar winner. Monster. Furiosa. Oh, yeah. 2 Days in a Valley. Young adult.
Yeah.
Snow White and the Huntsman.
Aeon Flux. Yeah. Oh, Prometheus. She just runs in a straight line. Wait, this and Fast... This... Wait. Prometheus and Fate have the same thing because they just run in straight lines from submarines and falling ships. John, you were a submarine captain for a while, right? Lazavath?
I was.
Can you turn a submarine on a dime?
It depends how big the dime is.
Maybe a quarter.
Could you... Of stock dime.
Oh. Yeah, give me like a couple nautical mile head start. Captain, we sighted a dime like 50 miles in front of us. Begin the turn.
So when the dime hits, like, hey, we made it.
Yeah.
See that? Okay, that's a good point.
I have an international law enforcement question. One of you is probably an expert on this. So earlier in the movie, like in the beginning of the movie, when they do that gig and when Vin Diesel double crosses Hobbs and the crew, and then Hobbs and the crew are guilty of crimes of terrorism, I don't know, something or other, and they're arrested in Germany for crimes they were committing in Germany, and then they went to an ultra maximum security jail in America. Does that make sense?
Hey, it's Kurt Russell.
Does that make sense?
No, but it's Kurt Russell.
And so, and then they're in jail, right? I just want to say that while I think it was completely ridiculous, I loved everything about that really dumb ultra maximum security. I think it was called ultra maximum security.
Oh, dude, I love it.
Prison that they were in. Because that action scene was like, I was like feeling the impacts of that brutal choreography.
Yeah, those two guys hit you. So, do you think the German version of Kurt Russell's Mr. Nobody is Mr. Nine Buddy?
Mr. Neinsmann. Nine.
What do you guys think about Baby Eastwood in the movie?
I liked him a lot. I thought he was cheeky. I thought they tried to make him too much like Walker, but I don't know. I liked that he was cocky, but he knew nothing yet. But he was still pretty good.
You know, it's weird. Like, you look at him, he looks so much like his dad. Like, but the thing is, like, he doesn't... I'm not trying to rag on him, but, like, he doesn't have, like... Because, like, Clint Eastwood is kind of, like, a really masculine kind of just dude you don't want to mess with. And, like, it looks like... His son didn't really get any of that. You know, he doesn't have that kind of masculine kind of
swagger.
Yeah.
Clint Eastwood says, "Get off my lawn." And that kid would be like, "Could you kindly remove yourself from the grass? My father doesn't like you there."
Yeah.
it's kind of weird. Like, you look at him and you just kind of expect, like, you know, Clint's kind of toughness, but you don't really get any of that. And it's just like, it's really weird. You know, I don't know if you guys felt the same way, but I'm just like, I don't know. Like, I'm kind of, it's a little confusing, but like, I mean, he was still pretty charming. I mean, he was funny.
Yeah, he was good. And I liked his little interplay with Tyrese. But I mean, it helps when you're working with Tyrese because Tyrese is like the MVP of all these movies. Yeah. But no, I liked Eastwood. I don't know. I didn't, you know, none of his scenes or moments took me out of the movie. And you needed the rookie to make the mistake so Vin Diesel could capitalize on it.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I want Kurt Russell's Mr. Nobody as a boss because he trusts you and he lets you make your own mistakes, but then he swoops in to kind of save your butt. So he's not like a micromanager, but he also is like, he kind of lets you try to, he lets you learn.
He lets you fail.
No, he does. And I think this movie proved that Kurt Russell's the best boss you could have.
Sure. It's the best way of learning.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I can totally see how they were trying to make him like the quote unquote new Brian, but like it just didn't really work out that way, you know.
I, I wasn't fond of him because the dynamic he had with Mr. Nobody. Mr. Nobody kind of, in my opinion, lost a lot of his swagger when he adopted the mentor role. He didn't seem as smooth to me in this movie.
The How Did This Get Made podcast made a good point. They're like, they feel like Kurt Russell just walked over from the Guardians of the Galaxy set because they were shooting at the same time and like just shot for like 2 days and then left because he was on Guardians. So like he couldn't be there that much. So they needed like another government guy to be there to take them on their missions.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that makes sense.
That's right.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I think now it's a good time to take a break. Yeah, I guess we're going to talk about something, and then we'll discuss it when we get back from the break.
We're going to talk about torpedoes and bring it back in the second half.
We're going to talk about turning on a dime after 40 miles.
Sure. We'll see you guys in a little bit.
When I say pod, you say...
pie.
Wait a minute.
Whoa. What's
Robert,
going on,
take
Kyle?
Take your headphones off real quick.
Okay, sorry.
John, what the hell is this?
Oh, I don't know. Robert invited me over. And
yeah,
I don't know.
This is kind of awkward. Are we doing like a promo or something?
I don't know. I wish we put on his pants though.
Yeah, he's like dancing around. He's talking about Shark Dropper.
I think he's looking for the baby oil.
Anyways, Robert, what are we doing? Huh? What are we doing?
What was that?
What are we doing?
I can put my headphones back on.
Yeah.
Oh, we're doing a promo for Shark Dropper.
Oh, okay.
That podcast we do that has improv and we just talk about our daily lives.
Oh,
and
that's
stuff.
True.
Yeah.
I still wish you'd find your pants.
Where can I find it?
Oh, wait, are we supposed to wear sharkdropper.com?
Sure, short time.
Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. We didn't discuss any of those things that we talked about.
We still had a very good talk, though.
It was. We can't really talk about it because there are a lot of personal things that were talked about. But it was good, man. It was good. I'm glad.
Levin Good cried.
Yeah.
Twice.
Sure. It was a good talk.
I don't know why it's more significant if I cry twice, but
yeah.
You know, I think when you keep everything in and then you just let it out, mm-hmm. it's just not healthy.
If you're listening at home, just trust us. It was an amazing, amazing thing that we talked about.
Just learn to parcel stuff out, guys. If you're feeling something, don't bottle it.
Yeah.
You know, because when you shake a beer can, you open it, it's going to explode.
I mean, you got to do like we're in the safe place in the bird's nest with the.
Just you have two beer cans. One you just open, and it's opened up.
Quickly. Is one of them Cigar City Maduro?
Yep, and one of them you're shaking up. You're shaking because you're just holding everything inside. Everything gets whirled. You open it up, it explodes.
I hope that was just a Coors Light because I'd be upset if that was the Cigar City.
Yeah, actually, you don't want to waste good beer.
I'd be upset if that was a Coors Light. Coors Light's not too bad.
Here's a beer, man.
It's the coldest beer in the world, Coors Light.
Hey, man, I drank my fair share of Coors Light back in the day.
That's all I used to drink.
It's a good beer.
We used to play poker, Laz, right? And yeah. I used to bring, what, Jack and Coors.
It was a good combo.
Yeah.
So, okay, I think now's a good time for another listener question. Mark?
Well, speaking of beer, this one's from Eric. If you carry around a keg of beer to every Black Ops site like Mr. Nobody, which beer would you bring?
Okay,
so I think that the question here really is, what beer would you bring if you only expect to drink that one kind of beer for a whole keg's worth of beer? Because a lot of Black Ops sites will not afford you options.
Well, no, you get whatever you want. You're Mr. Nobody.
Well, then can I bring 12 kegs of beer?
No, just one.
But see, then you only get to drink that one beer.
Well, then you got to pick wisely.
That's right. I'm saying, but like you're picking.
So for me, I would have done Tropicália by Creature Comforts, which is the best IPA in the market. However, I get kind of loose drinking Tropicália. So I'm going to bring in Guinness from Ireland, from the Guinness factory. Whenever I go to a Black Ops site, I'm getting that 4% nitro, drink six, feel great. Guinness from the UK. That's going to every Black Ops site with me. That way I can have a couple and still go shoot bad guys. If I have a few Tropicalias, I'm missing every bad guy.
Interesting.
I don't want to miss bad guys.
My decision-making process actually went very much the same way because like they're the beers that I really, really want one or two of, and then there are the beers that I would want to drink for a, like a session, if you will, right? And so for me, it's like, just because I just moved here to the Tampa Bay area again, I got, I'm kind of focusing on the Cigar City line.
Oh, heck yeah. Which one you bringing?
You know, I think it would be the Maduro.
Ooh, the brown ale.
I think it would. Like even High Lie, they go down too easy for me, but pack a little more punch. I think that the brown ale is going to keep me at a better pace.
Yeah. Because there's nothing worse than being at a black upside and being drunk.
And if I went with hard cider, I think my sugar levels would just get too high.
Yeah, you'd be crazy.
Homemade apple pie, you'd be urinating liquid sugar. It's no good.
Yeah, you can't do that. Thermal radar can sense that.
Yeah, like once you have six of those, you like bees are just flying towards your junk while you're peeing.
Jesus. So what do you got, Laz?
I'm going Amberbach.
Oh, Amberbach.
It's just like, I know it's not the best beer in the world. I mean, it's okay. But the thing is, like, when it comes to kegs, I always have like a very vivid memory of Amberbach. I think it was definitely senior year of high school, me and a couple other buddies, one of us in our circle, like he was old enough to get like a keg. So we threw a party, we got a keg of Amberbach. I'm not sure how we settled on Amberbach, but you know, it was a good party. We didn't go through the whole keg because, you know, people brought in other drinks and whatnot. So like the day after, it's just like, oh man, we still got like this keg here. Like, let's try to finish it. And we just couldn't finish it. I remember we had that keg for like, it seemed like forever. Like it was just like always full of beer. I'm just like, we got to get rid of this. We can't just let this beer go to waste, but we also don't want to drink it anymore. You know, I don't know. Like, so if I'm bringing like a keg to a Black Ops site for some reason, like I just want to bring Amberbach because I want to see like someone can finish it. You know,
what about a keg of Doublebach?
No, I'm
good. Oh, that'll beat us down too much.
I saw Lazvath couldn't finish half a 12-ounce bottle.
Ugh.
I think we were watching like Ungbach or something, and you couldn't finish a double bock.
It was like drinking like 10 loaves of bread at once. It was just,
that sounds right up my alley.
It was rough, man.
So we got Amberbach, we have Guinness from the UK, and we have Cigar City Maduro.
Sure. You know, I could drink any of your guys' beer all day, though. Like, I like all your choices.
Could you
finish a keg of Amberbach? Because apparently we couldn't.
Oh, I like it. It's like an endless keg.
Well, yeah. I'm not going to do it by myself.
So you guys know me. You know that I've consumed a lot of beer. But the best beer I ever had was at Madden's Pub in Belfast, and it was Guinness.
So oh, I'm because going Guinness UK. Tastes better back in the homeland?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Yeah. So smooth. You can have like 12 of them and wake up the next morning, go for a jog.
Ugh.
Like our last podcast, you could almost run all night after six of them.
Yeah. I've done that before.
You've done it?
I've done it. Maybe not in Guinness, but just completely hungover and just had to go for a run.
Well, we did the Tough Mudder. That's 12 miles and you get a beer after it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm good.
And a Danish.
See, I didn't get a Danish. I think it was just like that small cup of beer.
I got a gross Danish. And I ate it all. Because after 12 miles, they could have handed me mud. I would have been like Leo and just eaten it.
Acting.
What was that?
Is that the final answer? Just gross Danish?
Yes. I would just have a keg of gross Danish IPA.
There you go. All right. Thank you. For those wonderful listener questions, everyone, keep sending them in. The weirder, the better. Can't promise you we'll answer them, but you'll get some.
Gross Danish.
Yeah, yeah.
Laz, can you do me a favor?
Please.
Since you saw Fate of the Furious last, can you explain the plot to us in 176 words or less?
Okay. So Vin Diesel drives a car into the Cuban Bay. Charlize Theron has dreads. Clint Eastwood's son gets a paycheck. The Rock grabs a torpedo. And then they have a barbecue. I think that's less than 176.
Yes, about right.
There we go.
Okay. So when we were at break, Mark looks over and says, "Did we even go over the plot of this?" And it's like, no, we didn't. In all fairness, this movie does a poor job explaining the plot.
I mean, it's not like it was necessary, to be
honest. So this was the least plotty of any of the 8 Fast movies.
So Dredds comes up to him and she goes, "Hey, I got your wife or your ex-girlfriend who had a kid," which doesn't work out in the timeline.
Uh-huh.
"And I have him on an airplane. And so you have to destroy your family, even though your family doesn't really care that much. You're kind of like, man, what's wrong with Vin? And then you got to act like my version of like, you got to be my bodyguard, kind of like a Punisher type, while we have zombie cars. And then I'm going to kill, they conveniently kill a woman because then she's not around anymore. You can just have the kid." Mm-hmm. "And then we got to force it on poor Letty."
It's, yeah, I don't know.
So she was behind parts 6 and 7, and now she's pulling Vin's puppet strings like she was the 2 Shaw brothers in 6 and 7. And she is now re-stealing the God's Eye that one of the Shaws had before that Kurt Russell got a hold of and she needs back again, so that she can find these Russian sub that has these nuclear launch codes that she wants to use to keep the world's powers accountable and in check.
Yeah. So she's like, "Listen, if you make me mad, I'm going to blow you up."
Okay.
And that's sort of all we get for plot.
You know what I love? Helen Mirren during the filming of this movie was like, "I want to be in a Fast movie." So they rewrote it during filming to include Helen Mirren.
And it fit. It fit.
Yeah. She was, like, that's what I hate about these movies. They've made Helen Mirren fit. They brought back the villains from 6 and 7, yeah, and you were rooting for them, mm-hmm, actively rooting for them. Jason Statham basically became Uncle Statham after becoming Murderer Statham.
It was adorable, though.
Yeah, and he was killing people in a beautifully choreographed scene while a little baby kept smiling.
His reactions with that child were priceless.
It was amazing, like Uncle Statham. And at the end, he becomes part of the family.
Like, with that baby scene, though, that extended baby plane escape kill scene, like, I feel like during that scene, not before, not after, but during that scene, it's like I forgot that he killed Han.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe afterwards, you're like, wait a minute, but he killed Han. But during that scene, it was so I was transcended to the wonderful happy place of Somewhere Over the Rainbow and Face Off when they put the headphones on the little kid and there's the shootout in the drug dealer's house.
Yeah.
Like, that was outstanding.
Like, and then the zombie car scene, that was brilliant. And it did so without killing too many pedestrians.
That was amazing. That
a service announcement or like social allegory against self-automated cars?
Like, that was like, that looked like World War Z, but with cars. And was,
yes! Yes, it was, though.
I love the part where, like, it was raining cars from the parking garage. Because I remember, like, when the movie was in production, there was, like, a leak of, like, I guess they actually did drive cars, like, off a parking garage. Like, this was, like, in Ohio or something. But, like, yeah, I guess if you were to Google it, like, you'll see, like, a couple GIFs of, like, of cars actually be driven out of a building. And it's just, like, you saw it on screen. I'm like, whoa. Like, that's just pretty cool. Watch. I don't know.
That's neat. Yeah. You know what's kind of crazy is, like, that scene looked totally CGI to me. I didn't know that they dropped cars out.
Well, I'm sure there was a lot of CGI, but, like,
yeah.
But yeah, like, that was like a big leak like a year and a half ago, where, like, yeah, they actually drove cars, a whole bunch of cars out of a building all at once. So just like, whoa.
I don't know if you remember on Cap Civil War when all those cars come falling out on somebody. Hawkeye shoots something and a bunch of cars fall on Iron Man.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was during the
airport fight.
Yeah.
So I was there that day and we just dropped 3 cars, but then it became like 1,000. I'm like, why did we drop the 3 cars? Sorry. Never mind.
You've been outshined, apparently.
Yeah. That's like I love the, you know, and this Fast movie's already made $1 billion. And, like, biggest opening of all time, any movie ever. And it's just a bunch of idiots driving cars around. But there's like this cool international cast. Like this movie has it figured out. Like the Fast Guys have just, they just know what's up, and I love it.
It's like they totally understand like what their audience wants, and they just deliver, you know?
Yeah. There's a submarine. Like, I think Vin Diesel keeps ringing back. Like, Vin Diesel loves acting with Game of Thrones people and Last Witch Hunter, Rose Leslie, XXX3, he had the Hound. And then this one he has, well, and 6, he had the hacker Ramsey, and then he also had Redbeard.
Yeah.
So Game of Thrones, international cast, cars, familiar characters, you're making a billion.
Also The Rock.
Yeah.
This director, Gary Gray, who did Straight Outta Compton and Law Abiding Citizen.
An Italian job with Charlize Theron and Jason Statham.
Right. But like this guy, like he's done action, but this is like 100 times the action he's done in his entire career combined.
Yeah.
Like if you, there was something I thought about after I watched this movie, and that's that if you were to divide the action scenes by 3, it would still be an action movie that was loaded with great action scenes.
Yeah.
There's so many hugely memorable scenes. Like there's the prison break. There's that World War Z car thing. There's that fiery backwards race in Cuba in the beginning. There's the plane fight scene. There's the high speed submarine chase, which lasted like, I don't know, 12 minutes of nothing but craziness.
They drive on really long runways and lakes.
Yeah.
But I mean this movie, like I just named like 5 things where if there were just 2 of those incredible scenes, you'd have like the 2 major action scenes of a major summer blockbuster.
And you know what's wild about those is that The Rock and Jason Statham are never really The Rock is never on screen with Vin Diesel, and Jason Statham is barely on screen with Vin Diesel. And it doesn't really even affect it.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
It's, yeah.
But there's so many major players, though.
Yeah.
That it's not obvious to an untrained eye.
I am telling you right now that Tyrese is the MVP of the Fast World.
Well, you know what he is? He's like the warm fuzzy of reality.
Yeah.
He's the one person there to remind you, man, you know, y'all, we're not bulletproof.
Well, him and Paul Walker were that. So now he's kind of doing it double time.
Oh, man.
Well, Paul Walker would be like, yeah, you're right. This is dangerous. But Paul Walker would still just go like headstrong into this shit. Whereas Tyrese is like the, do we want to think this over again?
And I love that he took that Lamborghini on the ice. Yeah. I'm taking this car.
Can a sub really go that fast while it's plowing through feet thick?
I guess if it's Russian made, right?
Ice for a mile at a time. Just saying.
And like, yeah. I love that they had to hide in an actual fish truck to go to a fish facade that had like was a house to like 500 cars. This movie, though, I'm going to tell you guys right now, I didn't want to like this movie, but I left like going, I love this movie. Like, I love it.
While watching the movie, I caught myself momentarily being repeatedly aggravated by the fact that this has no plot, really, and that they don't, you know, we don't enjoy any of the planning scenes because the other movies were big on the planning scenes and like the prep. And this movie didn't have that. It had so much going on. And yet I'd get momentarily bothered. But all the rest of the movie, I was just constantly stimulated with action joy.
Yeah.
But I mean, and so many great lines and so many great, like, but this movie, like if you eliminate the prep and the plot points, because they used to care a lot about that in these movies, but like this gives you more and even more action than like any other 2 Fast movies.
Yeah.
It's so much.
I don't think it has any iconic moments in it. Like Fast 5 when they're car surfing, then jumping in the lake.
Yeah.
Or the vault drag.
Yeah, yeah, like I don't think there's iconic moments, but all around it's just what people want. They just made a movie that people want, and it made a billion. It's going to make $1.4 billion.
I have one iconic moment. Even though it's not like visually striking, The Rock throwing a torpedo with one arm. And he was talking about that like on the Today Show before the movie even came out. He was talking about how the movies have just accelerated and accelerated to like superhuman levels. And he actually said on the Today, it was the Today Show or Good Morning America, he was expressing how he's like, oh yeah, I basically throw a torpedo at a sub.
And then he said, like bullets don't hurt him. Rubber bullets didn't even affect him.
I mean, so, I could totally believe that, actually.
Yeah.
That was like the one thing I could believe and all that.
I have a question, guys. If I poked you really hard in a sensitive spot, it would hurt, right?
Like in the feelings?
Yeah, if I just like poked you.
Yeah.
Like, but if you got shot with a rubber bullet.
Yeah, but you got to remember, like, we don't have as much padding as The Rock.
Yeah, right. That's a lot of cod.
Yeah. A lot of cod and chicken breasts.
Cod fat.
Yeah.
Well, he was also wearing a vest, right? I mean,
not in prison.
Yeah, it was just a prison jumpsuit.
That's right. Yeah, he was in prison. That's right. It's just his shirt.
I'm pretty sure that was just cotton. like
if polyester, I walked up to you guys and lucky. I pinched you, you'd be like, ooh. Hey. Like, if a rubber,
I don't know if I'd make that sound.
I would. I'd be like, ah! Like, if someone hit me with a rubber bullet, I'd be like, ah!
Sure. All right, guys. So,
watch it.
One thing I want to talk about is the fan service that was in the movie. I know it's really corny, but, like, I kind of loved it. Like, I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but there are, like, a lot of moments, a lot of callbacks to previous movies. Like, the moment where Shaw is chasing Toretto, like after on the streets of New York, and then Vin Diesel pulls out the gun on him, like he was like, "You thought this was gonna be a street fight?" It's kind of in reference to the the fight at the end of Seven. It was like quote unquote a street fight, you know.
So I thought Jason Statham cheated.
Yeah. So that was I thought that was a pretty clever little callback.
I didn't even pick up on that.
Yeah. Also, the big one, maybe we should call Brian in on this. Like, no, we promise not to. And also, like, naming the baby after Brian. I'm like, you know, that was a nice little moment.
Stupid question. Couldn't they have named the baby Paul?
I thought they were going to name the baby Paul, but they went to Brian instead. I'm just like, that's still... But so plain. Yeah. So
you're like poking holes in something that doesn't need to be poked holes in.
Sure. There are like other kind of fan service moments, callbacks that I'm pretty sure I'm forgetting about. But I'm just like, yeah, like they're totally like I think these movies are in a unique position where they can kind of reference themselves at this point. You know?
You know, one scene I don't like what happened to Letty, where she's like, well, I don't really know if I want to have kids. And Vin Diesel's like, hey, we have a kid. And she's like, oh, shit. But I do like the scene where no other driver could keep up with Vin except for her.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that was pretty cool. Like, she's, like, equally matched with Vin in these movies. Oh, yeah. And I thought that was pretty badass. Like, that chase scene in, what was it, New York, I guess? Or what was that chase scene in? New York?
Yeah, that was New York.
Yeah. Like, I like that she was the only one that could keep up with him. Mm-hmm. Like she knew like what he was doing. I thought that was neat. And never once was she like, yeah, like he's turned real evil. She was just like, something's up.
Sure.
I don't know. But I like that scene with her. I like that she was like, she actually like straight up caught Vin. I don't know. I like that.
So you know how like, so she knew, everyone knew that something was up, like that, you know, that Dreadlock Charlize had something on Dom.
Yeah.
So, but, like, remember when he had the gun on Letty and she's like, you won't shoot me. You love me, this, that, and the other. But, like, and Redbeard wasn't there yet, right? Even if the God's Eye, whatever, was watching and Charlize knew everything he was saying, wouldn't have a negative impact on Charlize's dreadlocky mission if he just were to say at some point, hey, guys, they have my son. By the way, I have a son. That's why I'm doing this. It wouldn't have any negative impact on Cypher's whole plan. Yeah. If he said that at any time, he could have like called him on a cell phone in front of Cypher and said, hey guys, by the way, turns out I have a son and the mother, Elsa, is right here and she has both of them and she's going to kill him unless I do this. Why don't you guys just help me?
Wait, I don't think it's that simple because because she did kill the mother because Vin, quote unquote, just let Letty go or like kind of let Letty off easily.
Because that complicated the mission. If he had told them all what was going on before that, they wouldn't have been trying to stop him in the same way. In fact, they might have been totally changing their entire operation. And it wouldn't have had a negative impact directly on Cypher because now they wouldn't try and directly stop Dom.
No, I think she, I think Dredd's Charlize still would have, she was just kind of like unhinged enough to where like doing that still would have had like a huge repercussion, you know?
She must have told him not to.
Yeah.
Cause I just hate that Elsa was killed as like a plot device where it's like, oh, she's gone. So now I can have my baby.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I felt bad for her. I'm like, oh well. Obviously, you're just a plot point. So,
dude, how about when they tried to fool us into thinking that they killed Jason Statham?
Oh yeah,
yeah, no one was buying that.
No,
when they did that, I'm like, no. And then I thought to myself, I'm like, wait, no.
So the Rock and he are getting a spinoff, so that's kind of cool.
I mean, that's cool, but I. You know what's funny is that, like, I heard that news before I saw the movie, so it kind of, I was kind of expecting, like, a lot of really cool scenes between him and The Rock, like, I mean, and there were, but, like, it wasn't actually enough to make me think, like, man, like, I really want to see him in a spinoff, if that makes any sense?
I mean, I didn't really think about it in that way, but, like, I thought that they had the best one-on-one dynamic of maybe any other pair of characters.
You want to hear something interesting? Vin Diesel's getting crap because they filmed a post-credit scene with The Rock and Statham, and Vin Diesel heard about it, went, no. Like, and I think that's fair. This is Vin's move. This is his franchise.
You know what? I actually stayed throughout the credits for, like, a post-credit scene.
Yeah, they filmed it, and then they were like, and then Vin was like, no.
I'm sorry, Laz, what were you saying?
I stayed throughout the whole credits, expecting a post-credit scene. I didn't get one.
There was supposed to be one, and Vin was like, no.
Well, thanks, Vin. Thanks
but like
a lot.
That, this is his franchise, though, so he's probably like, no, I should be in it.
If they filmed a scene and Vin Diesel didn't know about it, I feel like that was a specifically sneaky thing done between Gray, Johnson, and Statham.
Yeah, so then he found out and said no.
Very,
which probably means that no matter what Vin originally thought of Jason Statham, now he probably has put him in the box with Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah.
No, he doesn't like any.
That's a very interesting box.
Yeah.
That's a very bald. I just dropped an F bomb. Totally.
Hey, PG-13. That's a very bald box, though. That's for sure.
Dude, all three of them actually. Got Tyrese.
Yep. Don't forget Tyrese, man. He's number 11, but he's number one in our hearts.
Sure.
Number one in your hearts.
Oh man, I just I can only. I'm trying to imagine what that movie is going to be like. You know, are they just going to be ripping on Dom, quote unquote Dom, the whole time? Like, oh, we're so glad the other bald bastard's not here, right?
I really hope that it's something that's just tangentially referenced once or twice in a whole movie, and otherwise they just have their own thing, like really their own thing.
Can they add Sean William Scott into it?
That'd be lovely.
Oh, please. I feel like he needs to be getting more work than he
It would be cool if the spinoff movie was The Rundown 2.
Wait, Sean William Scott was in Southland Tales with The Rock. He's been in two movies with The Rock. They're all buds.
Doesn't seem like it's enough.
I'm gonna put that up. I'm gonna write a post and just say Sean William Scott should be in the spinoff.
I want Sean William Scott to be the villain.
I want him to be in every movie. Why not?
Dude, he's so good in Goon.
He is. And he was really good in the American Pie movies, too.
Yeah.
You know?
Can I tell you a pretentious story?
Please.
I met him on the set of American Reunion. We talked about Bronson, the Tom Hardy movie.
Oh, really?
And yeah, we talked about Nicholas Winding Refn films.
Wow. Yeah, so he's a pretty down-to-earth guy.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah. So this is way before Goon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can watch me in that movie. They ADR'd a line of dialogue in my mouth, which I should have been paid for.
Right.
And then I'm walking around in the background as a party goer.
Yeah. It happens.
Yeah. Sure. But yeah, sorry to do that. I know I'm talking about movies, but he's a good dude, Sean William Scott, man.
Yeah. He needs to be in more movies.
That's right. I don't care what Levengood thinks about Goon. I've known Levengood for like 18 years, and nothing really bothers me about Levengood, but he just doesn't like Goon, and that frustrates me.
I just wasn't impressed with it.
You know, like I've grown past like you don't like a movie. That makes me angry, but I just love that movie.
Yeah. All right, guys. Go ahead.
I was saying maybe because I was like a bouncer / boxer. But I can't skate, so I would never be Goon.
Yeah. So I wanted to point out this is the kind of first Fast and Furious movie. Probably since what, Tokyo Drift, not to have Paul Walker in it. Did it feel kind of weird?
Yeah. Yeah. Felt less earthy.
Yeah. It I don't know. It didn't. I mean, I know Tokyo. I love Tokyo Drift. Whatever. Obviously, it didn't have Paul Walker. It didn't have a lot of people in it. But like, it still felt like a Fast and Furious movie. This one, like, it didn't. I think it's like the first movie I've seen in this franchise where it didn't have that kind of Fast and Furious kind of feeling, you know?
More like a blockbuster feeling?
Yeah, it was just like a blockbuster action movie. Like, it was kind of missing that whatever magic that Paul Walker brought to the other movies, you know?
I agree.
I don't know what it was.
And if you're interested, listen to episode 10 of ours where we cover every single Fast movie.
Was that up to 6 at the time?
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we did a Furious 7 pod. We did
Oh, I keep forgetting that we've been doing this pod for 2 years and 5 months.
How many Fast and Furious movies does that cover?
Two.
Three.
6, 7, 8.
Yeah, because our podcast was called Corona Belgian Beer Barbecue and the Furious and the Fast and Furious films.
Yeah. Oh, man.
We've done 3 podcasts on the Fast and Furious films.
There we go.
And we're going to do a couple more, apparently.
That's right.
It just felt weird that such a huge part of the franchise wasn't in it. Well, you know,
they replaced character development with more action scenes, and then they replaced plot with more action scenes.
See, they did character development and plot with just like they did 2 birds and 1 stone, and that stone was that baby. All right, guys, here's the character development, and here's the plot. It's
and
gonna
some
be
breads, flavor.
Yeah, it's gonna be based on this baby, and we're good to go.
I do love that we're just calling her Dreads.
Well, so I read an article, Mark, you might have passed it around social media, and it was about her having like the best hair or something. But in the article, it referenced that the nature of her scenes and how she was usually just standing there in a scene and usually just with Vin Diesel, that someone thought that like she just walked on set, recorded for about 5 days and then left.
Yeah, she was probably there for like 8 days
or something like Like, I mean, it didn't seem like they were accusing her of phoning it in, but like that was like a smash and grab job.
Oh, for sure. Cause she's just looking at computer screens a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. That stuff.
That's like it's a 5 to 10 day job. Maybe I'm wrong, but I would say about that.
Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of scenes where she was just like in a room talking,
looking at a computer. But
yeah,
I'll tell you what, though, there's a scene in that movie that's like, it was like a 5-page long, like maybe like a 10-page long dialogue sequence, like a 5 to 10 minute dialogue between Vin Diesel and Charlize Theron. Like, you don't see that in Fast movies very much.
Mm-mm.
Like, Vin Diesel enunciated and said more dialogue than he has in the last three films combined in 10 minutes.
I'm telling you, man, he was trying to get those digits.
That's right.
I'm just like, oh, man. Like, you guys need to write, like, a really long scene so I can have time to put the moves on dreads here.
And give her dreads. I like dreads.
Yeah.
Her dreads.
It's weird because, like, I don't think she quite pulls him off. Like, it doesn't look bad, but it's just, like, it's just...
I never bought him, but I never hated him.
Yeah. I'm just like...
Yeah, I'm with you there.
Like, I wouldn't go all in on him, but I wouldn't fall the other either. I'd see what the blind is, you know.
Sure. So
we said all these Fast and Furious movies, mm-hmm. and Vin Diesel has a strong role in it. But what is his role in the filmmaking? What?
Oh, like, he's a producer. He comes up with the ideas. He is the guy. He comes up with the script, the plot. You know, Moritz has written like a bunch of the films. There's a guy who's written, what, 5, 6, 7, 8. But he is the idea guy. He's the producer.
Right.
This is like, he doesn't have any writing credits.
Nah, but he's a producer. He's like, yeah, we should go here. And then people write it and he goes, I don't like that. Then they rewrite it and he goes, yeah, it's better.
Hmm. Like, they don't even list him as a producer of the, okay, they do. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's a producer. Yeah.
Just not a writer.
Yeah. Okay. What Vin wants, Vin gets.
Sure.
I was surprised to see that he didn't have, like, writing credits.
I hope this movie's so successful we get a Last Witch Hunter 2.
I thought that was planned, like, right when the first Witch Hunter was revealed.
It just tanked. So maybe now they'll just be like, oh, whatever, it made $1.4
billion. Hmm. And he's like, now that this made so much money, I can afford to make whatever I want.
Yeah, we'll kick him 50, whatever.
Yeah.
It's like his Riddick movies.
Yeah.
So, like, going into this movie, I heard that this is going to be the first of a last trilogy.
Yeah, they're going to 10,
so
right?
They're going 10. I'm just like, it's kind of weird because, like, I was expecting more of a build-up towards, like, a final trilogy. It was just kind of, I mean, I guess I shouldn't be too surprised, but, like, it just ended like all the other movies did. It was just, like, a happy conclusion with them, you know, at a cookout. It was just like, yeah, I mean, Dredd's got away, but, like, you know, quote unquote, she's not doing anything at the moment, so everything's all good. I'm just like, really? It just didn't feel like they were building towards, like, a final conclusion. It was just like another, just felt like another movie.
All right. So part of this is from How Did This Get Made, but this is what I think. Part 9 and 10, Dredd joins the team. Denzel Washington becomes the bad guy.
He was the guy pulling her dress.
Yep. And his daughter is Ramsey.
Oh.
And she's pulling his strings.
What?
Whoa.
Mind.
So How Did This Get Made came up with Denzel, but we just took it further. We've too fast, too furious Denzel.
That's crazy. But then we find out in the very last scene that it was all a plot masterminded by What's-His-Face from Tokyo Drift.
Or the trucker from the first one.
Yeah. Oh, yes. He finally shows his face. It's Daniel Day-Lewis.
It's from The Matrix.
It would have to be Christoph Waltz.
Yeah, the last Fast and Furious 10, the faceless trucker has to be in the final scene. Like, he finally gets his really convoluted plan finally comes to fruition. Like, it finally pays off.
Christoph Waltz.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Kate Winslet.
I really want to see Fast and Furious 10 now. Like, I just want to fast forward.
Dude.
Oh, my God.
The trucker from the first film's the orchestrator of it all.
Oh, it would just make so much sense. Right? Okay, so what's the general consensus here on Fate, F8 of the Furious?
10 stars.
10 stars.
I'm giving it 12 out of 4 stars.
All right. I'm giving it 8 dreads out of 8.
Ooh.
I'm giving it 8 dreads out of 4 stars.
Yeah. I like that. 8 dreads out of 8 dreads.
There you go. Just go see it. Just don't think about it. Just watch it. It's okay.
This is an action movie spectacular.
Yeah. It's what
I loved it.
It's what you want to see in the Fast and Furious movie. Just a lot of action, minimal amount of plot, and just some really funny jokes sprinkled here and there.
Tyrese.
There you go.
I give it 10 bald heads out of 10.
There are a lot of bald heads in that movie, for sure.
Yeah.
I give it 10 bald heads out of 4 heads with hair.
All right. Before we say goodbye, are there any plugs you want to make?
Once again, guys, watch the Daniel Day-Lewis movie where he is a catapult.
I think I'm gonna watch it. I'm just like, is that where Leo like gets in it?
Yep. He does more puddle grunting.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was in the trailer where he just like he climbs into it. The camera cuts to his face. He's like, I'm finally gonna take off. Coming this summer.
Puddle grunting.
Yeah. I can't wait to see it.
My left catapult. The last of the catapults.
Sure. A boulder in a basket.
Catapults of New York. There will be catapults.
The last of the catapult. Oh, you already said that. The last of the catapult. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
The catapult. See, Lincoln's not that good because it would just be catapult. And then there's 9.5 catapults.
Yeah.
It would be cool if they catapulted a trebuchet that launched ballista.
Wait, I want to see a catapult shoot a trebuchet.
Like, what are they doing? I don't know, but I want to see it.
This is not going to work well with the centripetal force. Like, that doesn't even make sense.
Hey, man, it's Daniel Day-Lewis. I wouldn't bet against them.
Catapults will cause blood.
Sure. All right. For my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Catapults cause the last of the Mohicans.
John Lumbergood.
Good night, everybody.
I've been your host, John Lasso. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll see you guys next time.
T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.